Alrighty, well, hey, good morning, everybody. John here, back once again, Crypto Top 10, coming at you with some of the trending articles in the crypto news space for November 18th. So as always, straight off the top, thank you to everyone who's subscribed. Really do appreciate it. And down in the description, you'll find links to all the articles talked about. So yeah, without further ado, nice little thing to go about, though we gotta mention off the top, Bitcoin cracked 18K. Hot dog. So we'll talk about that down at the end. Let's get through the other good stuff first. Zcash, don't really talk about Zcash too much on this channel, but they just celebrated their first halving on November 18th. So, you know, today. The occasion was marked by the implementation of what's called the Canopy upgrade, which establishes a development fund for the platform and removes the controversial founders reward and good riddance to bad trash. The halving and upgrade occurred at block 1,046,400, just over 4 years after Zcash was first mined back in late October of 2016. So again, congrats to Zcash for hitting this milestone, your first halving. What a neat time. Canopy is the fifth major upgrade to Zcash, which primarily consists of the change to how the mining rewards are distributed. The changes were proposed and ratified by the Zcash community. They established a continued development fund for the next 4 years. So 80% of everything mined goes to the miners. 8% will now be reserved for what's called the Major Grants Fund. This is exclusively reserved for independent third-party developers. So you want to develop on something on Zcash, you put together a proposal, you can get a grant from the Major Grants Fund to help fund it. The remaining 12% is going to be split between the Electric Coin Company, which gets 7%, and the Zcash Foundation, which will collect the remaining. The change primarily impacts the founders and employees of the Electric Coin Company, while the share reserved for the company itself has been raised slightly. In addition, bringing external teams into the Zcash development environment was a pretty good idea. Community considered it to be essential, hence why 8% going to that Major Grants Fund. It should help the Zcash community and the blockchain grow and develop in a decentralized way. Prior to this, 20% of the network rewards that didn't go to miners, so miners always got an 80% cut, but the remaining 20% used to be split between the Electric Coin Company, the Zcash Foundation, and the founders and investors who helped create Zcash, which, boy, what a great way to get richer, right? Founders and investors who created Zcash. So you had 4 years of fun. Now we're wiping the slate clean to make this a stronger blockchain going forward. Honestly, if you were a founder or investor who's been collecting Zcash for the past 4 years and you haven't sold, being like, yeah, I'll take less Zcash if it means a healthier ecosystem so my remaining Zcash grows in value, makes sense to me. Again, good for Zcash, good for them for getting rid of this investor cut or founder cut and replacing it with something that will actually benefit them in the long term. Definitely a coin to keep an eye on. It is considered a privacy coin, so do be very, very careful in that respect. Now, hopping on over, Cardano, they just released a metadata server called Smash. Hulk Smash. So they just dropped in a new blog post. So Smash is a metadata server that ensures that information about each stake pool on the network is relevant and valid. The goal of IOHK is to ensure as far as possible that the influence of bad actors like potential attackers, spoof polls, and trolls on the system is minimized. So, you know, a good thing. According to IOHK, the decentralization of the nodes is a key element in Cardano's success. However, in order to keep track of the information of the stake pools and to simplify the choice of a pool for delegates, it is crucial that the data is valid. Therefore, Smash was developed, a server that supports operators and ADA owners by validating this information about stake pools and then storing it as metadata. Not too bad. Smash also helps to avoid duplicate ticker names or trademarks, so you don't end up with two pools with the same name that do different things. By different things, they all validate for Cardano on the network. However, some stake pools will have a 2% cut that they take from your reward earnings. Some will have a 10% cut. Some will have a 0% cut, but everything goes to charity from the pool. So there's different ways that these pools can be structured, and there's different places that the funds earned from these pools can go to. So you can definitely support, you know, stake pools that use their funds to help support water solutions in Africa. Cool, do that. Or you can support pools that are purely for profit. Cool, do that. That's fine. But the idea behind this is to eliminate those duplicate ticker names or trademarks, prevent any issues, and ensure that the pools don't feature any content that Cardano users are likely to find offensive. They're going to be able to, you know, aggregate, retrieve, store the stake pool data. They'll be able to look back over it and see how these pools have changed, and just give us, the users of the Cardano network, a better understanding of where the money's going, who's getting the money, and that we can rest assured that they are good actors. Not too bad. Hopping on over, we got to talk about Grayscale, which just surpassed $10 billion worth of Bitcoin and other cryptos. That's right, one company just announced it holds $10 billion worth of cryptocurrencies. The vast majority of it is Bitcoin. Of that $10 billion, $9 billion is Bitcoin. This company has $9 billion worth of freaking Bitcoin, partially due to Bitcoin's parabolic moves over the past few weeks, nay, the past couple months at this point. Grayscale has had to increase its holding of the assets, and obviously the value of them has adjusted up. The firm's Bitcoin Trust product surged by 56% in the past month to its current $9.1 billion market cap, representing 87.5% of the assets under its management. And the product also saw a record of $215 million in weekly inflows over the past month. So 215 weekly, so you know, just like $860 million in a month. If you go by the weeks, 4 weeks in a month, dear Lord. Grayscale's other crypto holdings per the official release include $1.2 billion worth of Ethereum, as well as a smaller mix of ETH Classic, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, and XRP. I believe they also do have some Zcash in there as well, maybe even some Stellar Lumens, but those are the big ones. All of these are offered to clients via the firm's trust products. So basically, it's an over-the-counter issuance that represents a certain amount of that altcoin in each share that the investors purchase, i.e. they can own shares in these trusts that custody these cryptocurrencies without actually having to hold the cryptos themselves. Basically, they're putting their trust in a trust, without having to worry about custodying the assets themselves and dealing with that headache. Makes sense, but boy, oh boy, oh boy, is it pretty darn interesting that they're doing this. One example of these shares, the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, the share offering has a price of $20.16, and it holds $16.42 worth of Bitcoin as part of that. The remaining amount, so the difference between 20 and 16, is a small premium for the convenience and security offered to customers. So basically, that's how they make their money on that differential. $4 a share. When you have $9.1 billion worth of Bitcoin and your shares hold about $16.42 worth of Bitcoin, well, they're buying a heck of a lot of shares. That $4 and change adds up pretty, pretty darn quick. But we'll hop back to Bitcoin here in a minute. Let's hop on over. We'll touch on Ethereum 2.0 once again. At the time of writing, still less than 20% of the total amount of Ethereum required has been staked for the Beacon Chain launch on December the 1st. So it's probably not going to launch on December 1st, but in the early weeks of 2021. Of course, if participation rate in this deposit contract heats up, we could see that date change. So Ben Edgerting, the lead product owner at Consensus, which is like the Ethereum backer, he's advising on Ethereum 2.0's development across the Consensus organization, maintains a positive outlook on the December 1st launch, stating, I expect that the pace of deposits will accelerate sharply as the cutoff date nears. There's little benefit in staking early, so I think people are just taking their time. Whether there will be enough to push us over the threshold in time is hard to judge, but I remain optimistic. If there is a delay to Genesis, I expect it to be short. Essentially, whenever 524,288 Ethereum, forming 16,384 different validators, is created on the mark on the Beacon chain, 7 days later, phase zero will launch. Whether that happens on November 24th, so we hit the December 1st deadline, or if it happens on December 1st, so it launches on December 7th, or it doesn't happen until December 25th and it launches on New Year's Eve, who knows? Either way, we will be getting there eventually. Those who do stake will be locking up their tokens in a one-way contract until the current Ethereum mainnet joins the Beacon chain. No one knows exactly when that's going to happen. The current Ethereum 2.0 roadmap specifies it will be in 2021, but all it takes is a delay for some interesting panics to take place. So the Beacon chain is known as Phase Zero. The next significant developments are slated for next year, and it will involve the launch of 64 shard chains. They will operate under the proof of stake consensus validated by those who staked Ethereum. However, in their initial state, these shard chains won't support smart contracts or user accounts. Essentially, they will be for transactions only and will be upgraded over time to include smart contracts. This is going to be the biggest way that Ethereum scales, using these sharded chains, which still are run off the main Ethereum chain. Transactions can be done much, 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 much faster, and Ethereum can support many more. It's an interesting concept and one that the entire cryptocurrency community is highly waiting on. So even if all the roadmap phases are delivered within the next 18 months, which is a pretty big if, be well into 2022 before the full scalable potential of Ethereum 2.0 is visible. Despite coming into some criticism, two-layer solutions still offer the best hope of scalability in the short term and after the 2.0 mainnet becomes fully operational. If you look at the Mantic network and OMG network, they're two-layered solutions. They're based off of variations of what's called Plasma, which makes use of side chains to take the processing load off the main Ethereum chain. Honestly, it's kind of similar to how sharding will eventually work. The OMG network, or Omnivise Go, is definitely backed by Consensus and Ethereum. I think Vitalik works with them fairly regularly. So it's definitely like, I think they're taking what they learn from experimenting on the OMG network and applying it to their development of sharding. So Ethereum 2.0 has got an interesting and difficult road ahead of it. However, it's got the first mover advantage, it's got the name recognition, and it's got the DeFi ecosystem currently, and it does still have the ERC-20 token system, which allows a lot of new cryptos to be created. It's got a lot going for it, and it's going to be very hard for any other crypto to make up ground, though by God, Polkadot is going to try. So, hopping on over once again, there's something kind of strange about this Bitcoin rally. There's actually a couple things kind of strange about this Bitcoin rally. We'll talk about this first one, and then I will hop into the second. It's not actually an article, just something I wanted to point out. For much of Bitcoin's history, price increases have coincided with higher inflows of Bitcoin to the major exchanges. When there's a spike in price, there's usually a spike in Bitcoin going to the exchanges. Only this time around, it appears to be the opposite. And I think that makes sense given the change in the way people are interacting with Bitcoin. But for example, during the 2017 bull run, the inflow of Bitcoin to all exchanges jumped from 3,000 Bitcoin to 38,000 Bitcoin in just 24 hours, so over 10 times the increase. Now, that could have simply been, in my opinion, people who had bought Bitcoin at $200, $400, $600, $800 moving it to exchanges to sell it, to capture their insane profits while retail investors gobbled them up. But this time around, Bitcoin's price is not corresponding with people sending money to exchanges. Instead, Bitcoin is being withdrawn en masse from these exchanges. Since this bull run began in August, which is when most people are stating it did begin, the graph shows several significant drops in these deposits. A good example comes between October the 22nd and 27th. Bitcoin's price went from 12.9 to 13.6. Withdrawals from exchanges went from 704 Bitcoin to 13,000 Bitcoin. So there's a couple different reasons why, in my opinion, this is happening. One, places like Grayscale, which we have already talked about today, are buying up massive amounts of Bitcoin. Grayscale is just the biggest and most vocal. There's probably 20 to 30 firms like this around the globe who are buying up Bitcoin, Ethereum, all these other coins, and holding them in these trusts, and people can buy shares in them. Grayscale is not the only one. They're just the biggest one we talk about. And it's based in the United States, so it definitely gets a lot of focus. But there is probably a few dozen companies just like Grayscale around the globe in various different sizes buying these up, as well as that a lot of very rich people have been coming out in recent months talking about their Bitcoin stashes. Mexico's second richest man has talked about it, and a lot of other rich people, you know, Dave Portnoy getting in. I think Maisie Williams had some tweet. She was in Game of Thrones, so she's not really, you know, a billionaire, but she's a celebrity. A lot of people are talking about it, and a lot of analysts are starting to predict a $100,000 to $300,000 Bitcoin within the next year or so. So if you are someone who's been in the cryptocurrency space for a while, like those of us watching this video probably are, why would you keep your Bitcoin on an exchange? Are you going to be selling it when you think the price is going to go to $100,000? Or are you going to kind of keep that socked away somewhere you consider to be safe and secure until it hits that point so you can then turn around and sell it at that amount? Or at that point, buy a house, buy a car, sock it away for retirement. Seriously, if you think about it, there are, you know, DeFi with yield farming, crypto.com, Nexo. There's a couple other places where you can store crypto and earn interest on it. If you have one Bitcoin right now and you have it split up between different places, all earning between 5 and 8% interest, when that bad boy, that one Bitcoin goes to $300,000, that's $15,000 to $30,000 a year you're earning just in interest on your single Bitcoin alone. I know that's not FU money. That's not retire and travel the world money. But it definitely makes it a lot easier for you to live your life. Extra $10,000 a year, well, that's a car. That's a really nice vacation. Or that's you paying off your house that much sooner. That's financial independence. So why in the world wouldn't people be doing that? But hey, let's hop on over and look at the next graph. So this is Google Trends. So basically you can look at keywords, Google them, and Google will tell you their search volume. Bitcoin is currently on the board right now for those of you who can't see the screen. And Google Trends have Bitcoin, I mean, it's higher than it was back in April of 2017, but not by much. Whereas if you look at December 17th through December 23rd of 2017, when the bull run at that time was in full effect, the search volume is nowhere near. It's the absolute peak of Bitcoin 3 years ago. So while retail investors and people aren't searching Bitcoin right now, the price is still increasing. My sincerest hope is that once Bitcoin breaks through 20K and it starts sucking up more of the news cycle, which currently the controversy between Biden and Trump is taking all the air out of things for any other topic, we need to gain more traction. We need to attract those retail investors in. That is what is going to take us from 20 to 30,000 to 100 to 300,000, in my own opinion. It's something you can keep an eye on yourself. Going off of that, leading media outlets around the globe have started to take notice of the meteoric rise. The crypto has remained kind of a niche subject for the mainstream media, except for rare and nefarious events such as Mt. Gox or the crypto scam themed Twitter hacks earlier this year. Though, hey, the 20K Bitcoin did net a fair amount of mainstream media attention as well. Got to give credit to the positive where it is due. This new trend of Bitcoin approaching its previous all-time high has erupted onto the pages of some of the world's biggest newspapers and grabbing the headline at some of the planet's most influential news agencies. And that is a very, very good thing. British heavy hitters like the BBC is reporting on it, as well as PayPal's recent move that has helped the token towards mainstream acceptance. The Telegraph also has reported on this as well. France has stuff. Germany has stuff. In the Middle East, Arab language outlets carried a Bloomberg front page article on the price raise. Asia, which has always been a crypto hotbed, is definitely focusing on things. On top of that, we're only 13% away from the all-time high of $20,000. I mean, we are almost there. We really, really are. But that will do it for the trending articles and my diversion in the crypto news space today. I did want to take a look at things. Bitcoin had popped up over 18,000 for a while today. It dropped back to 17.5, and it's currently sitting at about $17,876. I expect it to retest and probably retake the 18K mark at some point today. Ethereum is also doing all right, though it's had quite a bit of a drop. It was sitting in the 490s at one point. It's dropped all the way back down to about 475. Though it is still up on the day and up on the week. It remains to be seen how it goes. XRP failed to hit 30 cents, if I remember correctly, and it's currently negative. Litecoin has retaken the sixth spot, flipping Bitcoin Cash. Good riddance, bad trash. Biggest loser on the day appears to be Polkadot, followed closely by Cardano. But still, it's a very green time for the crypto space. You're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days, but the overall trend of the market is up. Biggest winners on the day makes sense to me because people are kind of dumb. Bitcoin Diamond and Bitcoin Gold. Diamond is up 26%. Gold is up 18%. And I would contribute that to people buying it, thinking that it is truly Bitcoin or a variation of Bitcoin that they can get for cheaper. And my heart goes out to those people. There's only one Bitcoin, and it is Bitcoin. Biggest loser on the day, SushiSwap down 15%. I mean, they're still up about 60% on the week, so, you know, not horrible. Near Protocol comes in at second, Thor, Chain, and Comp. So, the typical losers are there, the typical winners are there, and we are looking at a pretty interesting rest of the week. I highly encourage everyone to keep an eye on the markets, whatever you're doing, wherever you're going. And rest assured, we'll make it. At this point, the total global crypto market is about $2 million shy from $500 billion. I thoroughly expect we will crack that ceiling by the end of the week. And I cannot wait to see where things go from there. But yeah. If you made it to this point, please subscribe. If you haven't already, just hit that little button. It really helps out the channel, nice and small as it is. And I'll be talking to all of you soon. Peace.